So, and they wanted to hear it. So, I'm nervous. I'm about as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Some of you won't get that till the way home. My name is Greg. I am a grateful believer in Jesus Christ as my Savior and my higher power. He's helping me recover from an addiction to drugs and alcohol, also dealing with pornography issues. And recently I've learned I have fear and anger issues also. This is my story. My mom and dad divorced when I was 2 years old. My mom remarried right away, so there was a father figure in my life rather quickly. I don't have many memories of my dad until my freshman year in high school. My stepfather was a good man, a hardworking man, and a strict disciplinarian, but not the loving father that a young child needed. I don't think he was prepared for an instant family. I was number 4 out of 5 boys growing up on a farm, so needless to say, there was plenty of brotherly love in our house. Life as a kid was rather normal on a northern Illinois farm until my older brother introduced me to marijuana at the age 10 or 11. What seemed to be innocent fun between two brothers would later turn out to be the first of many addictions. One of my brothers had located my father living in Tennessee, and around Christmas of 1974, I went to visit him, and I loved it down there. To me, there was nothing really anything left for me in Illinois, so I talked to my mom, and in the summer of 75, I moved to Tennessee to live with my dad and stepmom and my sister. In Illinois, there were strict rules to adhere to, and if I didn't, there would be dues to pay. In Tennessee, not so much. I started working with my dad mowing lawns around age 13, and it wouldn't be anything to knock back a few cold ones after hard day's work with my dad. Those occasional few beers soon led to me stealing his beer as well as his cigarettes. I started my freshman year in Tennessee, but during spring break, I moved back to Rockford, Illinois. I rode a Greyhound bus for 14 hours back home at the age of 13 by myself. These are the words my dad spoke to me as I boarded that bus. "I can't undo what your mother has done to you." Of course, at age 13, I thought he was mad at me, but I realized it was his resentment and bitterness towards my mom. Something he unfortunately carried with him to his grave last February. When I got back to Rockford, I was quickly reintroduced to weed and beer, which later led to experimenting with more harsh drugs like speed, crank, and cocaine. My high school buddies and I used to steal beer and liquor from our parents and buy drugs from friends at school, and then go camping in the woods nearby and just get wasted. When I got my driver's license, things seemed to accelerate very quickly. I was working at a Mack truck dealership at the age of 16, which just happened to be next door to a little tavern. Again, after working all day, it's nothing to go over next door with the mechanics and get drunk. All I needed for an ID was my uniform shirt. They assumed that since I worked at a Mack truck dealer, I was old enough to drink. This scenario continued until I got my first DUI at age 16. My mom hired a lawyer and got it reduced to reckless driving and a hefty fine. But that didn't stop the partying one bit. In fact, it probably helped escalate it. I remember being so angry at the system that was only trying to protect me from myself. I just didn't realize it yet. I also recall going to several high school graduation parties, and someone ended up taking my car keys. I ended up sleeping in my car that night. I'm sure my mom was going through some kind of living hell, wondering where I was and what was happening to me. In the fall of 79, I was at one of our regular Friday night parties at my buddy's house. I guess I was being some real jerk from what people told me. I don't remember since I was in yet another drug and alcohol-induced blackout. They told me that several friends had tried to take my keys, but I had punched one of them and took them back. Anyone who truly knows me knows that I'm not a fighter. I drove off and quickly proceeded to hit no less than 4 parked cars. the last one head-on. I went to jail for my second DUI. I ended up with 10 days work release and lost my license. It took over 9 years to get it back. Still not having learned my lesson, I continued drinking and drugging. Apparently God was watching over me as I continued driving without a driver's license and not getting caught. After all, I still needed to get back and forth to work so I could afford my habits. In 1983, I was working at a muffler shop where my heavy drinking continued. It was nothing to sit after work and polish off a case or two of beer with the other guys. I used to ride my bicycle to work, throw it in the back of my coworker's truck, and head downtown to the strip clubs and watch the dancing girls. Since I lived on the other side of town from him, he would drop me and my bike off at the cab depot nearby. You should have seen me trying to put a bicycle in the trunk of a cab at 2:30 in the morning. Drunkard. I'll get out. And this behavior of going to the strip clubs would keep up for a couple years, not realizing it would become a habit, which would later turn into yet another addiction. I met my wife in April of 85, and we were married in September of 85. I was still drinking heavily, but had pretty much given up on the hard drugs. I would still smoke some weed on occasion, but that was about it. She was what I would call a casual drinker, nothing like I was. We were the last ones to leave our wedding reception because I wanted to make sure all the beer was gone. Then we proceeded to drive over 80 miles into southern Wisconsin for our honeymoon. Since I knew where the place was, I elected to drive after drinking all evening and even without a driver's license. Again, God was watching over us as we nearly drove off the road a few times. Our first child came along in April of 88, a baby girl. Certainly this would change things, except my drinking. It took us over 3 hours to get home from the hospital in a limo, and we only lived 10 minutes from there. I had to make sure all the champagne was gone. I was a social member at the Navy Club in Rockford, a private bar that I had frequented. I remember coming home drunk one night, and my wife was up feeding our baby girl. She said to me, she needs changing. And I took our precious girl in our arms, bent down to the floor, only to almost fall on top of her as I lost my balance. I looked up at my wife, and with a disgusted look on her face and tears in my eyes, said I needed help. She said, yes, you do. She took the baby from me and left me on the floor crying. For the first time in my life, I realized I had a problem. Unfortunately, nothing changed for quite some time. After our twin sons were born, we moved to a farmhouse out in the country about halfway between our places of employment. Since I was working at a car dealership and my wife was working as a waitress, we worked opposite shifts as we could not afford daycare for three kids under 3 years old. We only had one car at the time also. God's grace showed up one night in the face of a three-year-old girl that said, Daddy, I'm hungry. I looked in the fridge and there were a few pieces of chicken left and a full case of beer. You could have knocked me over with a feather when she asked, Daddy, how come you have beer and we don't have milk? That was November 19th, 1991. My defining moment. My bottom. It finally dawned on me that I was taking food off the table for five people so that I could get drunk. I ended up giving that beer away and I haven't had a drink since. But the story doesn't end there. I had tried a few secular programs for help over the next couple of years, but I never found one I was comfortable with. A gentleman from church got up one Sunday morning and said he was going to start a Bible-based 12-step group. I immediately approached him and told him I was his man, as I had over 6 years clean and sober. After a little education from this group and a gentle 2x4 upside the head from God, I found out I needed more help than I could ever offer. You see, I was white-knuckling it for those 6 years. And I was the best dry drunk you ever saw. I still had all the rage and anger, fear, depression, emotional roller coasters, you name it. I had it. It wasn't until I found the only way to stay sober and sane for me was to ask Jesus for help. And more importantly, let him help me. He's the only reason I can stand here today and share my story. Because I know if I ever continued down the path I was on, I'd either be in jail or dead. Pathway, along with Celebrate Recovery, is working for me to help maintain my sobriety and sanity. It's also helping me deal with other issues I have. Remember all those strip clubs and dancing girls? Yeah. Studies show that somewhere between 60 and 80% of the men in the church struggle daily with pornography addiction. And those are just the ones that are courageous enough to admit it. Some of you know that I play drums and music is a big part of my life. I couldn't help but notice the songs tonight all dealt with hope and joy. Thanks. I want to leave you with a song from a local band back home in Illinois called Paradise Found. They turned out to be some of my best friends. This song is called You're Not Alone, and it is also a song of hope.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. What you doing? Oh, You're not alone. You're not alone. You're not
Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." Thank you for letting me tell my story. And may the peace and grace of God go with you.